Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and we've got an interesting show today. Before we get to my interview with Andrew Longman, first, just out of Iraq, and this is new to me. I didn't know this. I used to work for a military supplier, McDonnell Douglas Helicopter Company, on the Apache helicopter, and that was a lot of fun 20 years ago. And the Apache fired Hellfire missiles. They're anti-tank missiles. And during the war in Afghanistan, we introduced unmanned aerial vehicles, drones, if you recall, the Predator especially. And the thought back then was we want to man these things, arm them, so not only could they find the bad guys, but they could take out the bad guys. And not only have we done that using Hellfire missiles, but it's become routine, the use of them in Iraq. And here is an article from theworldtribune.com. And they quote Air Force Chief of Staff General John Jumper, who said, "We use a lot of Hellfire missile capability off of our Predator UAVs, that's unmanned aerial vehicles, to take out individual small targets like snipers and the like, that were found by the ground forces." And then he said, "The firing of Hellfire off a Predator is now routine." And he says in here, it's quite a deterrent. And I guess it would be, because they're no pilots. And so it's a relatively low investment, and we send these things ahead of our convoys looking for roadside bombs and snipers, and that is quite a deterrent. So good for them. And with Jordan rethinking their support for Al-Qaeda, their unbridled support for terrorism after the hotel bombings there, there are good developments in the war on terror. We're glad about that. But I want to do something different. Andrew Longman, I had not known of him until friends at Colorado Right to Life suggested I look at his website, and what a website it is. It's called andrewlongman.com. That's Andrew, LONGMAN.com. And it's all about Samuel Alito, George W. Bush's nominee to the U.S. Supreme Court. And I want to welcome Andrew Longman right now to Bob Enyart Live. Andrew, how are you?
Great. Great to be here. Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us. Andrew, tell us, my audience has heard what my opinion is on Alito, but I'd like to hear it from someone else. You've been involved in the pro-life movement for quite a while. What's your take on this judge?
I think what he is an establishmentarian who will please the Bar Association in Washington, and he's being marketed to us who the White House regards, I think, sort of as a sentimental group,
right,
as supposedly being pro-life. But everyone is glossing over the facts of what the man has done in public office for 15 years.
The way we've presented it time and time and time again, he has ruled on the Planned Parenthood side of issue after issue after issue, case after case, for right, most of these 15 years.
Yes. I understand that there's actually 22 different cases where he's had contact with abortion. I have discovered and read 10 of them. Out of those 10, there were basically 7 cases with about 9 opportunities for decision-making. And only in one of those opportunities did he decide in the pro-life manner. And that is the one that you see plastered all over the press that, oh, he's this marvelously pro-life guy.
Well, and even in that one, that was what I would call a legal positivist pro-life law. Here at Bob Enyart Live, we're against any law that ends with, and then you could kill the baby.
Exactly right.
Right?
Exactly right.
But sadly, the pro-life movement at large, the national ministries, support laws that end, and then you could kill the baby, because they think it's strategic and it'll get us to a victory sooner. And so it was a law like that back in 1991 that Alito upheld that. But other than that, he has ruled on the Planned Parenthood side of the issue over and over again on the most extraordinary and extremist cases involving tax-funded abortions and involving late-term abortions and wrongful death of the fetus, partial birth abortion. Over and over, he rules on the abortion side of the issue.
Really true. Let me just talk for a second about the New Jersey partial birth abortion ban. The people who are supposed to be our Christian leadership, the Jim Dobsons and company of the world out there, say of New Jersey partial birth abortion ban ruling by Alito, oh, his hands were tied. Oh, the precedent required it. Oh, he had no choice. I spoke with the pro-life lawyer who actually defended the New Jersey partial birth abortion ban to Alito. Hmm. And got his mind on it, said, what happened here? Well, he presented Alito with a large number of ways to keep this thing alive, the chief of which was he wanted to get Alito to send the law to the New Jersey legislature, to the New Jersey Supreme Court, which could have narrowed the statute in terms of abortion procedures, narrowed it to partial birth abortion in very crisp legal language, whatever, and thus kept the ban alive. Alito refused to do it, and there's several problems here. One is there was actually a tactical thing whereby the lawyer could have gotten the whole case thrown out because the three physicians who brought the case did not perform partial birth abortions. And so if he had managed to narrow the statute to strictly partial birth abortion, he could have gotten the whole thing thrown out. And at the time, no one in New Jersey did partial birth abortions at all or would admit to it in public. So it could have been months or even years until you found somebody new to complain. He had this opportunity to either knock the law out for months or years or maybe permanently. He didn't explore it. He let it go.
Well, I think the big problem here is that Alito is a professed legal positivist who will elevate the law above God.
Sure.
And we think today, this is the current state of affairs for the body of Christ. We think that God said, thou shalt not murder. But if men make a side deal, then we release ourselves from thou shalt not murder. So
yeah.
If we make an agreement between men, whether it's a constitution in America or wherever in the world, we make some agreement. Here's the new rules that we're going to live by. Then we release ourselves from thou shalt not murder as though we have the authority to do that. We do not. And so when Alito votes in all these cases to keep legal the killing of unborn children, whatever the minutiae of the legal argument, mm-hmm. our Christian leaders should say it is wrong to kill unborn children, and any judge who supports or keeps that legal is guilty of innocent blood.
Well, and what bothers me is they are so, I just commented on a way that he could have, even within the legal system, tried to keep the ban alive. They don't look at these things as obligations.
Not at all. Right and wrong, truth, justice are not relevant. It's the process.
Right.
Yeah. And all right. So, well, let me ask you if you have thought about the job application Alito filled out 20 years ago.
Yeah.
When he told Ronald Reagan's Attorney General, Edwin Meese, that he believes there's no right in the Constitution to abortion.
Right.
And we went on the air yesterday telling people don't believe that. Don't believe that's his true feeling. He was just filling out a job app.
Yeah. Well, and he has said as much today. I have a couple of quotes and an opinion editorial piece on my site. I wrote a column about it yesterday. But there's two quotes that I thought were really funny if you put them next to each other. So 1985, he says, the Constitution does not protect the right to an abortion in a job application, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
2005, he says, I was an advocate seeking a job. It was a political job. I'm not an advocate. I don't give heed to my personal views.
Mm.
Now, what good is a moral conviction if you don't pay attention to it? You know, it's beyond me to understand the mindset of a person who can say that you are pro-life and you don't believe in abortion, and then when given the opportunity to do anything whatsoever to stand in the way of genocide, either by decision or by providing intellectual support for stopping it, or
right.
anything,
right.
but you don't do it,
mm-hmm.
what does that mean? How can you be against the Holocaust,
well,
but if given the opportunity to stop it, you do nothing?
You would not, right. It means you're a hypocrite and self-serving, and political power or your paycheck is more important to you than protecting innocent children. The case with, you have Democrats like, let's say, John Kerry,
yeah.
who says, I am pro-life, but that's my personal view. And so I'm privately pro-life. And the pro-life leaders in the country, they point out how absurd that is.
Yeah.
But then we have our Republican candidates and judges who say the same thing. I'm pro-life. Personally, I'm against abortion, but put me on the bench and I'll rule for Planned Parenthood time and again. And then the pro-life leaders defend those people, saying, look, they're being sincere. They really are against abortion. I don't know if you heard Sean Hannity's show yesterday. He had Edwin Meese on, Reagan's attorney general. Yeah, it was hysterical. Here's this document is publicized by The Washington Times. It's out of the Reagan Library. It's 20 years old, and it's Samuel Alito doing an application to Edwin Meese. And so Reagan is pro-life. It's a conservative administration. So Samuel Alito says, I don't believe there's a right to abortion in the Constitution. And I go on the air and I say, don't believe it. It's just a job app. Conservatives always say these kinds of things when they're in the primaries or they're trying to get our money or a confirmation, and then they get into office and they're pro-aborts.
Right.
I mean, it's happened 1,000 times over.
Right.
So I say don't believe it. Well, then Edwin Meese goes on Sean Hannity's show, and he is defending Samuel Alito, and he's saying don't believe it. He's saying don't believe it. It doesn't really mean that he's going to rule that way. And you know what Sean Hannity, who's supposed to be pro-life, does? He's lapping it up. He's lapping it up. He's like, yeah, we don't, Edwin Meese is saying, look, you don't have to think that Samuel Alito is going to vote pro-life just because he wrote that in an app 20 years ago. It doesn't mean anything. And Sean Hannity loves it. Well, why would Sean Hannity love that? He should be angry. He should say, we want a man who says there is no right to kill an unborn child.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So Andrew Longman, tell us a bit more about your website and about you.
Well, in the same vein, I look at these plays that are being played out for us, where we're told that, oh, his mother said he opposes abortion, and
right.
his employment application said he opposes abortion, but then he won't actually oppose abortion, and all that's supposed to be good.
Yeah.
What is the mentality behind all that,
yeah.
that drives that thinking? And I think it's this. The people in Washington know from the Harriet Myers nomination that the pro-life base actually controls this process. But they think that the pro-life base is a bunch of sappy, sentimental goofballs who will believe anything they're told. And so all they have to do is make this sentimental argument that he's pro-life. Oh, his mother said so. Oh, he said so on his employment application. Oh, he's such a good boy. And then they turn around to the people who actually, in their minds, matter, and they say, oh, but he won't actually vote against it.
Right,
and
right.
And so the combination of these things is supposed to advance the agenda. What we have to do at this point is stand up and say, look, we're not a bunch of sappy, sentimental dodo birds. You have to prove to us by fact that he's actually pro-life. Or you know what?
Or
we're
we'll
going to
oppose
this nomination.
Or we're going to
sink it.
We're going to oppose him. Let me quote to you Dianne Feinstein, Democrat, California, pro-abortion, radical feminist senator from California. And there's an Associated Press story out today because today she spoke with Samuel Alito. And she asked him about his 1985 job application in which he said the Constitution does not protect a right to an abortion.
Right.
Here's what she said. Dianne Feinstein.
Right.
He said, first of all, it was different then. He said, I was an advocate seeking a job. So I guess he means he lies on job applications.
Right.
Then he said, it was a political, this is according to Dianne Feinstein, it was a political job, and now I am a judge. I've been on the circuit court for 15 years, and it's very different. I am not an advocate. I do not give heed to my personal views. What I do is interpret the law. And then she was asked by the AP reporter, Jesse Holland, she was asked if she found that answer satisfactory. Mm-hmm. And she said, the question is, do I believe he was being absolutely truthful? And I did. So Senator Dianne Feinstein, Democrat, California, pro-abort, right, is saying, you know what? I trust Samuel Alito.
There you go.
I trust that he does not have a moral foundation against the killing of the innocent. I trust he will rubber stamp the process.
There you go.
And that's the hero of the pro-life movement at the moment.
Yeah, well, it's almost like, what else do you need to know, right?
Yeah, right.
There's this, it's a side story, but it says something about public honesty. You know, Alito made this very, very clear statement to Congress 15 years ago that he'd recuse himself from these certain cases involving his own personal finances.
Yeah, and then he did not in a rather blatant way.
Yeah, he just goes ahead and accepts the cases. But I thought his explanation was borderline hysterical. He said that the reason that he did it is that it would have been unduly restrictive on him. Now, I find that amazing because it's the undue burden which supposedly allows for the inflicting of killing. And yet when he himself is subject to an undue restriction on a minor point.
Yeah.
He rewrites his own precedents that governed his own life.
Right.
He won't rewrite a precedent for our lives.
He ignored the promise he made, and right, because of the undue burden. And then the U.S. Supreme Court has quoted Samuel Alito in their current undue burden test that you can't restrict abortion if it's going to make it especially difficult for a woman to get one. And that's and that comes courtesy of Samuel Alito, who expanded on Sandra Day O'Connor's emerging concept of an undue burden.
You know, I studied this at some length, and the detail of this is just totally appalling. The main pillar holding abortion together these days is that case that Alito ruled on, and it was really prepared originally as a kind of arrow by the pro-life movement to try to chip away at the foundation of Roe. In other words, the law that originally spawned that case was a construction on the part of folks who cared about innocent life. And so it was sort of designed to be handed to a judge so that the judge could do something. You know? Alito was so confused by the precedents in that case, and Rehnquist commented on this, that there was no clear precedent about the test for abortion law.
This was Planned Parenthood versus Casey.
Yes, yes. And Rehnquist commented that the total confusion of state of the previous precedents was so large that the burden placed on the appeals court to try and figure it out was enormous. And so Alito had to figure out not only which of these conflicting precedents applied, but after he figured out that Sandra Day O'Connor's applied, he had to define Sandra Day O'Connor's position for her because she didn't know. Mm. The end result is he rewrites undue burden, hands it to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court looks at it and says, oh, yeah, that's what we meant. Yeah, yeah, thanks a lot for clearing that up for us.
Mm-hmm.
And he now becomes a pillar.
Right, and for him to get, you know, pro-lifers live in this magical world where the politicians we vote for are really lying to us when they say they nominate pro-abortion judges, but when they get in office, they're going to have a change of heart and do the right thing. Or the judges that tell us they have no personal views that would prevent them from upholding Roe v. Wade, we pin our hopes on that they're lying to us, and maybe they really do know right from wrong. And so they're hoping that this guy, Alito, who spent his whole career as a federal judge upholding the slaughter of innocent children and expanding the law on that issue, that he's going to get to the Supreme Court and say, you know what, I've been guilty of the killing of thousands of children. I'm going to repent. I mean, that's inane to peg your hope on that. It's inane.
Exactly. Exactly right. And, you know, you can look at not only the person's decisions, but their leanings. You know, did he show any sign of leaning in the right way?
Right.
In Alexander versus Christy Todd Whitman was a fetal wrongful death law issue. And in this, he had every opportunity to say something, because here's the fact of the case. There was a person who was pregnant, and they were being rushed to an emergency cesarean section. And 14 minutes before the birth of the child, all the vital signs of the child were there. The kid was fine. They have a C-section, and the child is dead 14 minutes later. The contention and the suspicion of many facts surrounding the case is that the C-section was botched, and that's why the child died. Even in this case, which has nothing to do with abortion, it's just somebody trying to have a baby in a hospital, he could not look at it and say that there was any protection whatsoever for that child being born.
In other words, if there is malpractice, then the doctor, the hospital should be held responsible if there is truly malpractice. But for the judge to say there is no protection for this baby, even as it's being born, regardless of whether there's malpractice or not,
right?
Do I understand it? That's where Alito came down.
Yeah, he said there's no constitutional protection for the unborn, which is the abortion position. I mean, the only reason to rule that way in a case like that is to continue to support the abortion lexicon.
Right. Exactly. And so for pro-lifers to get so excited that 20 years ago, before he was a judge, Alito said in a job app, there's no constitutional right to an abortion. We've been pointing out since his name was mentioned that this guy has found no constitutional protection, no protection of any kind for the baby. And that's not pro-life. This is pro-life. Pro-life is to say that no one has the right to intentionally kill an innocent child. That's murder.
Right.
That's the only pro-life position.
And even if your rulings, like, for example, in the partial birth abortion ruling in New Jersey, what if he had managed to, get it to the New Jersey Supreme Court, and so the law gets thrown out for a couple months before somebody revamps it and sticks it up again? Well, that would have been a couple months of saved people, you know. In Planned Parenthood versus New Jersey legislature, Alito decided that the abortionists could sue the New Jersey legislature because the New Jersey legislature had had the temerity to pass a law against abortion and be awarded $500,000 in legal fees, abortionists had to fight this horrible statute.
Andrew, do you know if New Jersey law mandates that legal fees be paid to the prevailing party in such a case?
Well, the interesting thing was, I spoke again with the pro-life lawyer who defended the case, and they had to turn a kind of backflip to pretend that the New Jersey legislature was the same as the state of New Jersey, because under the law, the state of New Jersey could pay attorney's fees, but the legislature traditionally enjoys immunity because its whole purpose is to create law. And so they had to do a kind of backflip to get this through. And so the lawyer appealed it and eventually whittled down the reward. However, I asked him, did Alito have to go this way? You know, was he forced to award? And he said, absolutely not. Again, he had options, and he didn't take them.
And that's only in the context of our current immoral legal system. If you're a judge in Germany and somebody wants you to sign off on part of the Holocaust,
right?
And somebody later says, well, they were forced to. It was the law. Well, you know what? We tried men like that in the Nuremberg trials, and we convicted them of murder. We sentenced some lawyers to death and judges to life in prison.
Exactly.
And their defense was it was the law, it was precedent, and if I would have resigned, somebody worse would have taken my place.
Right.
And those are the same arguments that now Gary Bauer is using in defense of Samuel Alito, who votes even to keep legal partial birth abortion in New Jersey.
I don't, I guess I do understand, but I don't understand the attitude of our major Christian leadership groups. There's been such a number of failures in this thing from the beginning. The first starts with research. You know, Samuel Alito gets nominated. Gary Bauer comes out in minutes and says, this guy's a home run, blah, blah, blah. And I say to myself, how in the world do you know that? Have you done the research on the guy to start with?
Well, and the same thing with Americans United for Life. You might know them. Well, they're the oldest national pro-life group in the country. They're a group of lawyers. And I interviewed their president this past week, Peter Samuelson. And he was on PBS's The Last Abortion Clinic this past week also. And he's radically supportive, totally supportive of Alito. And he doesn't even know the rulings. He doesn't even know. So the cases I was bringing up to him, he's unsure. He's not quite certain what it's all about. But you know what? He was sure Alito did the right thing every time he ruled for Planned Parenthood. He was sure it was the right thing. And this is where it started. It didn't start with Alito. It started 25 years ago when our pro-life leaders took on a political, a legal positivist strategy that it's okay to support laws and judges who kill the innocent if it furthers our Republican Party agenda.
The thing that infuriates me is that these larger Christian groups with the big names that are, you know, supposedly advocating for us in Washington, they have this paid staff of 35 young interns who can sit behind a computer terminal all day and riffle through cases.
Right.
You know, I'm Mr. Nobody. I'm doing this just for the sake of doing it because it should be done.
Well, and Andrew, there's three of us now. There's Leslie Hanks. There's you. There's me. No, there's a few others out there. But and we're out of time, Andrew. But your website, andrewlongman.com?
A wealth of information there for people who want to explore the issue in detail.
All right. Thank you so much, Andrew. God bless
you. Thank you, sir.
Appreciate you. And I want to tell the audience about our DVD called Focus on the Strategy. The first 1,000 copies are in. And so we're ready to start selling them in bulk. This is Focus on the Strategy. And it is an analysis of Christian political strategy. It's a one-hour DVD, professionally produced. You will love it. It's one for $10, three for $20, 10 for $50, and 25 DVDs for $100. You could order them by calling us at 800-8-NYART or go to our website, kgov.com. Now, Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada, simply the best Christian school I've ever seen. Check them out, Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada. Have you heard of the Plot Manuscript? It's 330 pages, an overview of the entire Bible. People who have read it have said it's helped them understand and enjoy the Word of God. Hi, this is Bob Enyart. I wrote The Plot years ago. We sell it at a money-back guarantee, $49.95 plus shipping and handling. And if you don't feel that you really understand the Bible now, we want to give you your money back. So go online to order it at kgov.com or call us at 800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278.